By the Way is a new radio show hosted by Michelle Perry, owner of Learn New Mexico. This show will keep listeners up to date on educational topics such as lifelong learning strategies and educational technology. By the Way is hosted by an expert in the field and is a perfect show for those who are passionate about learning and exploring new ideas. Join us for in-depth discussions, insightful interviews, and practical tips that will help you stay up to date with the latest educational trends.
Tune in to By the Way the first Thursday each month at 8 a.m. right here on KHII 88.9 FM Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and KEDU 102.3 FM Ruidoso. And it is that time, and here's Dr. Michelle Perry.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm good.
All right.
You're here.
That was the sweetest thing that they might
have. And you brought her.
And I did. Yeah. I did. I brought a wonderful guest today.
Yeah. And who is that guest?
Her name is Brandy Murphy.
Oh, look
out
now.
Brandy.
I'm going to turn my mic off and just sit back and enjoy this.
Yes, enjoy, because we're going to have a delightful conversation today with Brandy Murphy. Thanks for joining in, everybody. And I have Brandy here today. She is a dear friend of mine. We've got to know each other over the years. I don't know, probably like 3 years now. And I really am in admiration of all that you have done, especially recently, for this community. And so let's jump right in and let's start talking about Brandy. Tell us a little bit about yourself and talk to us about your, history growing up and then professionally and about your educational experience.
So, I am a native Alamogordian, born and raised here. I grew up with one brother. My dad has spent his life in the plumbing industry. He actually just retired a year ago, which is so crazy. And my mom actually worked for several of the grocery stores here in Alamogordo. Grew up here and born and raised. Went to elementary school, Chaparral, because at that time we only had Chaparral. Middle school, went to the high school. I didn't do very well in high school, I'll be honest with you. I struggled quite a bit. My 11th grade year, decided that high school I didn't think was for me. So I left the public education system and started homeschooling. Basically, my mom and dad helped me, but I homeschooled and then eventually went up to NMSUA and received my GED. So I left my mid-11th grade year. And then my dad said, okay, if you're going to do this, you either have to finish your school or you got to get a job or do both. So I did that. And for the first 2 years when I was finishing my high school and studying for my GED, I actually babysat my niece and basically helped my brother and my sister-in-law, because back in those days, we didn't have any daycare facilities that took infants. So you had to wait till your child was 2 years old to send them to school. So that worked out. Loved every minute of it. Did that. And then right after I got my GED, my mom at the time was a manager for Smith's Food and Drug. And I said, let's try that out. And I'll be honest. back in those days, I wasn't really digging having my mom as my mom and my boss. Matter of fact, my grandfather always had a story one time. He says, I'll never forget that one day that you came home and you said, I just can't stand working for that lady. She's constantly on me. She never lets me have any free time while I'm at work. And so, but I think looking back, that kind of made me who I am in the workforce today, mm-hmm. which is phenomenal. And so I'm very thankful that that she, I always say, rode me like a donkey. It's just a saying. So I'm very thankful for that. But I started with Smith's Food and Drug back in 1996. And then January 4th, 1999, I started my first day with Sierra Bank. And back in those days, Chuck Davis was our president. I'm sure everybody has heard that name because he was here for many, many years in the banking industry. Mm-hmm. But he gave me a chance, and I started working for Sierra Bank. And needless to say, I have never been able to step away from finance since then. So here I am 25 years later. I am a mom to three girls. I actually have six daughters total. I have three that are not biologically mine, but I love them dearly. They're the most amazing women. They're young women now, which sounds really crazy to say.
It goes fast.
Because I don't feel like I've grown up yet. But yeah, I have three biological daughters. My oldest is Alyssa. She's 25. She lives in Dallas, Texas. My middle child is Peyton Estrada, which I'm hoping that all of you know who she is.
Absolutely.
Because she is now the front face of the Alamogordo Center of Commerce, which just actually overflows my heart with so much joy. And then I have a 14-year-old Addison Gonzalez, who is now playing basketball for the Alamogordo High School, which really is so crazy to just think that, you know, they're all growing up and I'm staying the same. So
we don't age, our children do, but we do not.
That's right. But yeah, so I started a new gig in July. I work with Mr. Reed Griggs over at First Savings Bank, and I absolutely love it. When I first got into banking, what really attracted me is just being able to sit down with people and listen to, you know, their hopes and dreams, what they were wanting to do, whether it was open a new account, save for retirement, or, you know, borrow money for a purchase. And that's kind of what really attracted me to that role, is just being able to help people reach mm-hmm. those goals. And so I feel like I'm just back at home doing that again.
Awesome. So, what a trajectory, you know, from small beginnings to large end. You know, you've made it work, and you've done it right here in this community, which inspires me completely, you know?
I never really wanted to leave. I mean, it's just always been home for me. And it's funny because, you know, you have these kids and you raise them and then they grow up and they move away and you're like, that's not how I wanted that to happen.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
Even though they're doing amazing things and I'm, you know, behind them 110%, I feel like I've been very blessed to grow up and remain here in the community and reach the goals that I've set for myself.
That's awesome. So I want to talk a minute about that very difficult decision that it must have been to quit school, as it were, the traditional way, and go towards the GED. Just a background on me, at one point in my career, I was in the seat that made that happen for kids. They had to get through me and convince me that that was a good decision before I would let them disenroll and go the GED route. Now, luckily, here in Alamogordo, we have an outstanding GED prep program at MSUA called the PACE program, and they work really hard with students to prepare them for that test to make sure that they can get that equivalency. And I always felt like there is a place for that in our community. I never have ever personally or philosophically believed that one size fits all for our young people. And so when kiddos would come to me asking that I sign their form, because they couldn't get enrolled in the GED program until I signed off, I sat them down with their parents and I explained the situation and how it, you know, would affect them moving forward, not in a negative way, but that the realities of really what this is, and that you must go on, even though you're not going to traditionally or go with the traditional program, as it were, now, you must keep going. I'm about lifelong learning, and that the GED wasn't the end point. You know, just like our high school diplomas aren't our end point. You know, so it was always a great conversation, and I always got to know families, and I got to look and peer into what their situations were one by one, and that was really beneficial to me and them. And then, you know, when they succeeded, I mean, like you, I was so thankful and so happy that they did follow through and continued on and did that. Curious, though, Would there have been, you know, looking back long ago, not that we're that old, it was just a few days ago.
Right.
But graduated, the class of 91 right here. So, you know, when you look back, is there anything that the schools at that time could have provided or done differently to help you stay the course? Or was it just a life situation that you needed to leave the schools?
So I think a little bit of both. And of course, it's hard to look back and say, well, you know, maybe if they had this program. But one of the things that is really just really opened my eyes and I've tried to educate my daughters on is all of the different things now that are provided in the public school. So the different programs. So my oldest did not graduate from Alamogordo High School. Her sophomore year, the end of her sophomore year, she moved with her dad because she was laser focused that I'm going to attend the University of Arizona and whatever I have to do to get in there is what I'm going to do, which is, I tell her all the time, I said, it's so inspiring to me to see that she did. I mean, she left her hometown. She was born and raised here. She left her hometown and started a new high school. She went to Maricopa High School in Maricopa, Arizona. And they had a program that had she started her freshman year there, she could have actually graduated with her associates. Mm-hmm. The other thing that they offered is as a ninth grader, if you signed up for that program, you could actually do your continuing education after your associates, and it was completely free from the community college. Wow. If you committed to that. So there's programs that I've seen throughout raising my children that I wish I would have had access to back then, because I was very, and still am to this day, very hands-on. And I just think if there may have been some additional opportunities there, that may have been a conversation that I would have considered at that time.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are seemingly, I look back too and compare it to what I know about public ed today, and there are more opportunities, especially if you're driven to go into higher education beyond high school. My own son graduated, as did my daughter, from Alamogordo High School. And when he graduated, he indeed did have his associates. Mm-hmm. And he quickly went through his bachelor's degree because of that. Right. And so thankfully, you know, he was afforded that opportunity. And so I love that dual credit early college, high school kind of concept. And I think that it does open doors for kids who are driven. The other part of that is that, you know, not all of us are academic driven. And so we must be mindful to those students as well and make sure that they're getting appropriate and positive learning experiences within their school system too. Now, you said something that struck a chord with me there just now, and that was that you were a hands-on learner. And I find personally, philosophically, that the more interactive we can help our students be with their content, their learning, the better. The better they're going to retain, the better they're going to perform. What are your thoughts about how the schools might provide more hands-on experiential learning experiences?
Well, first and foremost, I think we involve our community, and we figure out, okay, what are some of the challenges that we're facing in the workforce today? What are some of the areas of opportunity that we can afford these kids that are going through high school right now, like you said, that maybe like me, hands-on learners that aren't going to or don't have that academic drive to continue going on to college. And I think we just start providing those opportunities. I received an email, I think Monday, that the high school is going to be putting on their community job fair again. So they're bringing in those community members so that we can educate the kids on some of the opportunities that they have in their own community. So these are some of the things that we can partner with public education on and let these kids know that these are some of the jobs that were, you know, that are open and that are out here. I was actually listening to Bob while I was waiting, and he was on the phone with a gentleman from PNM, and that they've got a program that they're doing, you know, to educate kids that want to go into the you know, electrical engineering or just as an electrician. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to start educating our children on the different career choices that they're going to have and how they can, you know, get into those fields, even if they do go to college and they want to, you know, come back and work for like the financial industry, that those opportunities are available and they're here for them.
Mm-hmm. So I love that you're really focused on how to prepare our students to enter the workforce. And as you know, our schools here in Alamogordo work really hard to do complete wraparound services to take care of the social, emotional well-being, the physical, even the counseling needs that perhaps our students have. You know, we work really hard. And my personal position is all about, you know, the academics. Mm-hmm. While we need to value the full wraparound system for all of our students, especially those who may need those supports because of the family circumstance or whatever have you, we must be mindful of the academic standpoint. And so I'm going to segue into your next great endeavor, as it were. Congratulations, by the way. You were just elected to the school board. And talk to us a little bit about what that experience has been like for you and kind of where you hope to take your position.
So it has been a very eye-opening experience. I think it's so easy sometimes when we're on the outside of everything to say, well, that needs to be fixed, and I'm just going to go in and fix it. And I just got back from training. So we had school board training last weekend in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so we really got to learn some of the ins and outs of what a school board does and how we can partner with our superintendent and our community to kind of make learning or education the best we can in our community. And so the last session that I attended, to me, was the one that just, it was like that light bulb aha moment. And the presenter was going over data-driven student outcomes. And again, I don't come from an education background, so I didn't, you know, understand some of the things that I wanted to change and how I could change it and what that would look like. And he did a phenomenal job at kind of just walking us through, you know, getting your test scores, walking through those test scores with your superintendent, the questions we should be asking, you know, what are we doing to bring our scores up? What are we doing to support those students that are, you know, scoring higher on the scale, right? Because we want to keep them engaged as well so that they don't get bored.
Right.
And then, you know, how can we be that support system in order to do that? And then tying that back to curriculum. Is it the curriculum that we need to take a look at? Is it maybe that the teachers are struggling in teaching that curriculum? And so there were just so many aspects, and granted, this was a one-hour class. My hand was cramping at the end because I was trying to literally write down everything that he said. But to me, that's where I feel like we have to figure out a way to engage the students and the parents in the students' education and how they best learn, and then how can we kind of bring all that together for their benefit.
And that's a huge undertaking. I mean, what you've just described is monumental. And so, you know, my background, I've been public education almost 30 years. And
God bless you.
But I have to say, you know, it's been in the most amazing career. And right. I'm just going to be always one of those people who try to inspire others to go into education. If you have a love of children and you don't take yourself too seriously, right. Education is for the people who don't take themselves too seriously. If you take yourself too seriously, you're in for a hard ride,
right?
Because the kids will test every last nerve, and you have to be ready to laugh at yourself as well. I can tell you that this isn't the first time that I've heard this conversation. I've been a part of this conversation about data-driven decision making. It's a phenomenal approach, and looking at assessment scores. You may already know this, but you're going to find those scores are not good.
Right.
You know, we are not doing so well. there's the state assessment, right? The MISA, I guess is what they're calling it these days. Back in my day, it was called something else. It's been, in my career, it's been called like five things. We've used five different assessments up to this point. So they come and they go depending on the legislative approach and things like that. So, the assessment for the state is one thing, okay, and we can compare ourselves, you know, to the rest of the state, and so we can look that way. But here's where it really hits home, is that when we look at NAEP, and so the National Assessment of Educational Progress, this is a nationwide assessment that basically looks across the board from fourth grade to eighth grade. Fourth and eighth grade are tested.
Okay.
Across the nation. And if you look at those scores in reading, math, science, here in our state, in our locale, we only test in reading and math. And so when you look at those scores, you see New Mexico in general compared to the rest, we're ranked pretty low.
Right.
So that conversation around assessment and test scores and the evaluation by assessment, you know, determining your strengths and weaknesses by assessment. This is a huge conversation, and the fact that New Mexico in general struggles so bad.
Yes.
We literally are 51st in the nation as
yes.
a state. So not to make excuses, of course, nobody's making excuses, but we have a long road to hoe. You know what I mean? It's going to take a lot to move that needle.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you think about diving in and using data mm-hmm. to support that effort, what would be your thoughts around how to move that needle, you know, specifically?
So specifically is obviously it is starting at the local level. So what, you know, what's working and what's not working, and how do we measure, you know, what aspect is actually not working, and then let's fix that. I do, however, and this is something that I've actually been kind of delving into, is I truly believe we have to fix it at the state level. And the reason being is, as a parent, I've done a lot of research through the PEB website, and just some of the things that I've picked up on personally is it doesn't seem like New Mexico has a standard foundation for public education. So every time we get a new elected official at the state level, new PED representatives are appointed, and we have all these new people coming in, and it seems like they come in and they change, you know, little aspects here and there. I can't even go back to when my older girls were in school and really do an apples to apples comparison on, you know, on the assessments, because they've changed what we look at, how we look at it, and everything else. And to me, that seems to be, to me, the first big red flag, right? Because how do you go back and say, okay, this is what was working then, or this is what isn't working now, if you can't really have a true comparison on that? So yes, I want to do things at the local level, but I've discussed with some of the other board members that I would truly love to see the state of New Mexico and us help the state of New Mexico get some foundational legislation in place that kind of sets up public education. What is it? What are we looking at? What should we be teaching these kids? And how do we get something in place that we can go back 8 years from now, 10 years from now, and say, okay, apples to apples, this is the growth that we've made? Because I truly think that that is a lot of what's happening in the state of New Mexico.
Yeah. And I'm going to do a case in point for to illuminate your, you know, what you've just explained.
Mm-hmm.
Is back in 2013, 14, we got a new Secretary of Education. Her name was Hannah Scandera.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember back then, but it was like a big to-do. The Senate was hesitant to swear her in, and so she was acting secretary for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with her, she brought PARC. And so we entered the PARC consortium with about 30 other states at the time. And we gave the PARC test for about 4 years there. So Hannah Scandera happened to be from Florida at mm-hmm. that time. And she was connected to Pearson, which is a publishing company
okay.
that published the park.
Okay.
So she was connected to them from her inner workings through Florida, came here, brought it to New Mexico, and again, we weren't the only state. Mm-hmm. However, through the next 3 years, I was brought on in 14, so 15, about six or seven states fell off because they weren't digging it. Right. The park consortium. The next year, another six or seven fell off. And so in the end, it was literally like three states that were left holding the bag with the park consortium, meaning this test. And so it was all brought through the Pearson Publishing, through, you know, the people that Scandera was associated with. And I'm certain she was trying to do good, but then she left.
Right.
And everything was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had to start over.
Right.
And so we've been trying to pick up the pieces since then. But even I can chart it back to 2001. You know, when I was an educator, we got a different test because we were going to start putting teachers' evaluations next to tests and evaluating teachers based on kids' test scores. So we went through that whole rigmarole,
right,
where teachers were feeling the pressure because if their students did not do well in the test, they were downgraded in their evaluation and could potentially lose their jobs based on students' assent. So that was all the way back in 2001. So talk up. I'm just definitely, you know, supporting your point there with exact examples.
Right.
So you're right. I mean, this has been the nature, at least in my short little 30-year career, this is what I have seen. Imagine if we go even further back. But I did want to talk a little bit more about your philosophy about hands-on engagement and definitely learning skills, workforce skills, these kinds of concepts about how students in the high school could be, their skills could be enhanced, their academics could be enhanced by this. What role does technology play in all that, in your opinion? How does technology in the classroom support those philosophies?
I think technology has to be the leading support, and I think the reason why is because I obviously so luckily I was in school when we didn't have the cell phones and the social media and all of that. Praise God for that. But it's so crazy how quick. And this is just even looking at my own children, how quick they pick up on certain things that they can do through their cell phones, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's mind-blowing to me because I'm like, okay, so I'm the adult, right? I'm supposed to know more and be smarter and all this. But when it comes to technology, I find myself constantly, you know, leaning in to my youngest, Addison, and going, hey, you know, how is this? Like, we get the constant updates on our phone. They have different features. And so it's like... And she's like, oh, Mom, it's just, you know, you go here and you do this or you do this. And even with my mom, I mean, she just teaches my mom so many things, and it's all through that little technology device. So just in looking through that lens makes me realize, okay, we definitely could probably get achieve higher student academic outcomes if that was a factor, right? If it was, if we could include that in. And then I just think back, okay, that's how I learn, right? Because I can't read. When I was working for BBVA, I wanted to get my Series 6 and 63 license. And I just remember thinking, okay, I wasn't really good at this in high school, right? And so how am I going to do this? And it literally, I mean, I literally had to set 2 hours every single night where it was just me, where there was nothing going on, where it was just me, the book, the laptop, and my highlighter. And I think now where I can, like, just listen to a book, and because I'm listening to it and taking it in, and it's I don't know. It's interactive that I seem to, I mean, it's just like the lyrics to a song, mm-hmm. right? I can't remember what I ate for lunch yesterday, but if you put on a song that was from the 80s, I know every line. And so I look at it from that perspective and think we have to find a way to bring more technology into our classrooms mm-hmm. because I definitely think that that just enhances that educational outcome.
See, here's the reality of the situation, in my opinion. And I just happened to have finished a PhD on this topic. So I think I can speak.
Congratulations.
I think I could definitely speak very clearly on this. You and I were not digital natives. Okay. We were born before 1981. Mm-hmm. However, our students sitting in our classrooms are all digital natives mm-hmm. now. That means that they were born into a world in which a computer fit in a pocket.
Right.
When you and I were born, a computer took up the size of a room. Mm-hmm. And they were getting smaller.
Yeah.
But they were still the size of a room, practically. So we watched the evolution of technology as device, you know, device technology that you could operate and create with, move from these large things that existed in a location into portable devices. And so the portability, in my opinion, is the key concept to educational technology today. If you are standing up computer labs or a space in which students have to go to in order to experience technology, you are limiting the effects of educational technology. This idea that students go to a place to experience technology is from literally the 1980s.
Right.
And so we have to think about portable technology. And so when we think about our digital natives, that's what they're used to.
Right.
They're used to accessing their technology on demand. Mm-hmm. And so with that came the onset of the one-to-one devices. And so through the pandemic, we were very grateful that
right.
Not only our school district locally, but across the nation, they went to one-to-one devices so that students could have that portable technology with them at all times. And I go and provide professional PD across the state, and I see that, not just us, it's everywhere. Kids
right.
have portable devices, and we've come to look at portable devices as disposable because they're cheap, they break. We get a new one, kind of like a
right.
phone. They're cheap, they break, we get a new one. Well,
right.
not all phones.
I know.
My phone's dang expensive.
Yeah.
But
you get it. But yes.
The thing is now we have a way, and you know I can't help myself, but I'm gonna go venture on into virtual reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we have students using virtual reality, we literally have them immersed, interacting, and completely hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
They can't look at their phone.
Yeah.
They can't be distracted by their neighbor across the classroom. You know,
right.
they are enmeshed into the learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I am teaching a unit on ancient civilization, I can pop the students into their portable devices, into their headsets, and we can all go to Machu Picchu together. And we can interact, and we can learn about Machu Picchu. And that immersion and that experiential learning is going to resonate and be helpful for that student
oh, yeah.
as far as the retention goes. And so we're using these portable virtual reality experiential learning devices as an enhancement to the curriculum, not the curriculum. I'm very adamant, that was one of my research findings, is that VR technology must be part of a larger cohesive educational effort.
Right.
It is not the end all be all. We're not going to go put kids in a headset and then by God they all of a sudden know all of biology or all of history or all of whatever. That's not how it works. There's still a role for the teacher. The teacher has to scaffold the learning and scaffold the experience for the child using this device as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And so the portability of VR technology is as important as the portability of a cell phone. And as we go into the AI era, because we're about to enter education 4.0,
mm-hmm.
which is a whole other ball of wax, the AI era is going to open up a whole other Pandora's box for
yeah.
us. And we haven't even caught up with the VR technology yet. So the world is moving so stinking fast. And so when you think about the future and you think about what you want to see for Alamogordo schools, even beyond technology,
mm-hmm.
what does that future look like in the classroom?
Ooh, man, that would be nice. That what does that look like in the classroom? To me, if I could leave, if I could do one thing and walk away feeling super successful and satisfied with my 4-year term, it would be knowing and seeing kids excited to come in and learn. To me, that's the hugest thing, because one of the things that I've learned, obviously, throughout my entire lifespan up till now is that learning is a constant. So we don't ever stop learning. There's always something more that you can, there's always ways you can be better at. Mm-hmm. There's always ways you can, you know, shore up loose ends. There's always this. And so if you can get a kid excited about learning, and not just now while they're in high school, but realizing that that's something that they're going to spend a lifetime doing, whether it's, you know, learning, you know, reading, whether it's learning, you know, how to have successful relationships throughout their career, learning, you know, new technology coming out. If you can just ignite that and make them realize that that's something that they're going to need to carry on throughout their entire life, to me, I would say that's success.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you can get them excited about that, they just realize that there's so much more.
Yeah.
And a lot of that stems from my youngest and some of the challenges that we had. It's as a parent, when you have a child that's struggling educationally and there's not anything that you can just snap your fingers and fix, it's disheartening to watch them continually struggle. And when Addison came out of BLS, and I've watched her over these last 3 years, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, just really excel. And it wasn't really that she was just like, I'm so smart now and I can do whatever. It was watching her confidence level, knowing that she can achieve these things, because it wasn't that she was, you know, dumb or, you know, didn't have, it was just that she needed a little extra additional help to shore up some foundational issues that she missed.
Mm-hmm.
And once she realized that, her confidence level, just her confidence level in being a student, I mean, it changed her whole attitude.
What is VLS?
BLS.
Oh, BLS.
What yes. is... Burton Learning.
Oh, yes. Awesome. So she had outside tutoring support.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
When COVID hit, as a single mom, I knew that there was absolutely no way that I could work my work day and then go home and spend how many ever hours it needed. And at that time, she was still struggling. So when COVID hit, I met with Gina Burton and said, hey, what can I do to get her in here full time? And so Addison spent a year with BLS. And then, of course, because of sports and her social life and missing her friends, she wanted to go back. After COVID, mm-hmm. to Chaparral. And she came out of Chaparral at the end of the year, I will never forget. And she came home and she had this certificate and it said a honor roll. And she was like, Mom, look. And it just, from that point on, it was just like a light bulb went on. Like, she realized, okay, that this is something that I can do.
Yeah. Well, I would also say that as a parent, you played a significant role in opening some doors for her and giving her some support. You know, as a parent in this community and knowing this community so well, what would be your advice to parents to make sure that they themselves are accountable for their students' education? What advice would you provide the normal, general, run-of-the-mill parent out of there as far as what they can do to make sure their kiddo is getting the education they deserve?
Get involved, be involved, and stay involved. And I'll be honest, it's intimidating, especially when you come from like me. I didn't graduate high school, so I struggled with that, you know, for a little while. Like, how do I go to these people and tell them that, you know, they're not doing something right or something's wrong, right? Because I don't know even where to start from that aspect. But what I will say is there's so many amazing people within the public school system, and there's so many different tools now that parents have. The PowerSchool mm-hmm. is a huge resource mm-hmm. and something that I think my daughter wishes I'd never had that app. But, you know, it allows you to see when things start falling apart, right? So my parents didn't know anything until they got a progress report or a report card. And I'll be honest, a lot of the times they didn't get the progress report till they got the report card. So now there are so many different tools and things and offerings, even through the public schools, as well as outside of the public schools, that parents can take advantage of. And I think it's just that old saying that the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? You kind of have to be the squeaky wheel, because, you know, you have to go into the schools and say, hey, I was looking at this and looks like my daughter's struggling here, and what can we do and how can we do it?
Yeah.
And that was me. The minute that Addison started having, I started having those parent teacher conferences. And that's the other thing is attend the parent teacher conferences.
Yeah.
You know, figure out what areas of opportunity your children have, you know, where they need help, and then have that discussion right then and there. Okay, what can we do? What resources are available so that I can make sure that my child, you know, gets what they need?
Mm-hmm. That communication piece is
huge.
Super huge, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. And PowerSchool actually has a little... looks like a letter that you just click on now, and you can email their teacher whatever question you may have. And you can pull up each assignment. Okay, mm-hmm. What did she miss on this? Mm-hmm. Is there something, you know, underlying there that mm-hmm. that we should look into mm-hmm. or that I can yeah. help with?
And I always remember in different various leadership roles in education and as a teacher, and I always felt it was kind of my role sometimes when a kiddo was struggling to help the parents understand a few things about child development.
Right.
You know, so there are stages and ages, and so we see certain things out of kids at different stages in their life. So
right.
when we see a 16-year-old rebelling, well, that's predictable. We know they're going to rebel. That's what they're supposed to do.
Right.
And so we talk about, you know, healthy ways we can support them as they go through their little rebellious journey, which
right.
we cannot stop and should not, because that's part of their development. And so, but we do, I used to enjoy those conversations with the parents about, okay, so when he or she's doing this, this is what it's, you know, really meaning, and so
right.
this is how we would go about supporting them to make a better choice, and this is how we're going to carefully support them as they grow through this phase.
Right.
And I used to love that parent education part that I would do, and parents who usually ended up in my office, especially later in my career, were having huge difficulties. You know, it wasn't
right.
just such a small thing anymore. By the time they hit me, it was a big one.
Right.
And so it was all hands on deck. Let's see what we can do to resolve this. And it was usually both sided.
Yes.
You know, something we could have done better, but also something that the household could have done better. And of course, depending on the age of the child could have done better. You
right.
know? So we were always looking for solutions. You know, mm-hmm. that was important, is to get the solution in mind and work toward it for the benefit of the student. So we've talked. I think our time is coming to a close. I'm going to go ahead, because I know you got to get to work.
I do.
I'm going to go
I
ahead.
Do.
Micah's just going to let us go, I think, for the next 3 days, and I could go on and on talking with you. Brandy, you are a delight, and thank you so much.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
I really appreciate your insight and for being here today, and I look forward to seeing you being sworn in on this school board coming soon.
Cannot wait to get in there and really just be immersed in everything that's going on, and figuring out ways and collaborating with our community, with our teachers, educators, to make our school the best, and not just the best in the state of New Mexico. I'm talking about the best.
Good. Awesome. I love that. Eyes wide open. And
yes.
I wish you all the best and wish you well. And thank you again, everybody. Have a great day.
By the Way is a new radio show hosted by Michelle Perry, owner of Learn New Mexico. This show will keep listeners up to date on educational topics such as lifelong learning strategies and educational technology. by the way, is hosted by an expert in the field and is a perfect show for those who are passionate about learning and exploring new ideas. Join us for in-depth discussions, insightful interviews, and practical tips that will help you stay up to date with the latest educational trends.
Tune in to By the Way the first Thursday each month at 8 a.m. right here on KHII 88.9 FM Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and KEDU 102.3 FM Ruidoso.